Business Baby with Melissa Ambry on Blog Talk Radio. Savvy solutions for your business.
Hello, everyone. We are on It's Business Baby. We have a guest for you today that's going to give you some tidbits on the risk of having a business, starting a business, having ventures, and just understanding sort of things to look for, to be aware of, and how to overcome some of the risks, and so you can have a successful business. And our guest today is D. Anthony Miles. He is an author, and he has a book that I think is, really necessary for those of you that are not quite sure and need some information on some of the risks of being in business. And the title of this book is Risk Factors and Business Models. And I say go purchase it, go get it. But listen to the show and listen to a lot of the advice that he's going to share with you. He's also a talk show host and executive producer of Game On Business Talk Radio, nationally known expert in entrepreneurship and marketing. Entrepreneurship and marketing, we all need that. So let's welcome our guest, Mr. Miles, for you today.
Hey, Melissa, thank you for having me on your show. I was looking forward to it. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. So tell us, how did you get started to say, okay, one, let me write a book on risk, and what enticed you enough to dig deep, do the research, and to be able to pull out all of the things that business owners need to know?
You want to know what the impetus for me for writing my book, is that what your question was?
Correct.
The impetus for me to write my book, I was intrigued by the business failures that I had been seeing. And actually the original impetus for my book was I presented a similar subject at a conference in Tucson, Arizona. It was about a business matrix, how to minimize your risk of starting a business venture and what some of the things that you had to be aware of. And I did not anticipate the great response that I received from the audience at the conference. So I was going to do my doctoral work, my dissertation on something completely different. And that just inspired me to pursue this as a research topic. And as I became more involved in the research, I found out there are very few books on business risk. There are very few books on business failure. And I said there's a significant gap there because I believe people should be aware of the risks that are involved with starting a business. So that was the impetus for me writing my book.
Okay. Well, in your bio in the book, you have five key factors of entrepreneur risk. What are those five key factors, and how do you get to apply them?
The five factors of risk are basically five. There are basically, I would say, 32 different individual risks, but I group them together so it's easy for individuals that are not familiar with all the market risks. But I don't want to get into technical jargon. But I identified basically five risk factors or models that influence a business success or failure. And those five risk factors are personal characteristics, intangible operations risk, enterprise operations risk, market climate risk, and business environment risk.
Okay, can you explain a little bit to, kind of
absolutely
help listeners understand?
Absolutely. In terms of personal characteristics risk, personal characteristics means your age, your gender, your education level, industry experience. Those things are critical in you starting a business. Most people tend to start businesses within their circle of competence. What I mean is most people start a business in the field they've worked in previously. You don't want to be the kind of guy that starts a business. You're a baker, and you're trying to start a business being a fisherman. Those are two different industries. So those personal characteristics play a big part in you starting a business. The next is called intangible operations risk. This has to deal with what are the influences that deal with your business, intangible things like licensing, legal issues. Is the business a legal business? Those type of things. Those risks that affect the intangible things that affects the enterprise. Case in point, if you went and made some business names or with a shirt or whatever, then you get a cease and desist order from a company saying you cannot use that name anymore because that we've already incorporated that name. Well, you just lost a lot of money printing up literature and stationery with that business name. You didn't do your homework. So that's what intangible operations. It tends to be legal things, okay? Number three is enterprise operations risk. Those are the risks that involve with the enterprise, the internal factors of the business like turnover, market climate, those type of things. They're more internal things, employees. Hiring, firing, those type of things, labor costs, those type of things. And you have the fourth one is called market climate, which is my personal favorite. Market climate means is the business, is it a healthy climate for you to start a business in? And what that means is are you trying to start a business where the market is saturated with that type of business venture or is it very competitive? So the market climate risk is very critical. It's more of an economic risk. And lastly, you have something called business environment risk. This involves external things like can the business survive a terrorist attack? If there's a shutdown of, tourists coming to your city, will that affect your business? So your environment is very critical to you maintaining your profitability, and that's considered a risk. If you have another great example, that would be if you have a natural disaster, like if you have a tornado or a hurricane or a tsunami or anything of that sort, will that shut down your business operations or will that affect your profitability? And that's what you would consider business environment risk. Those are the five general risks that I look at when I wrote my book.
Okay, awesome. It's very good. I would say probably, you know, some of the top before it might say you break down into the other 32. But those are some good top factors to recognize, to really look at before you, you know, start a business and start making some decisions on various things internally, externally, and just open the door. So, for instance, let's, you know, a little bit more on the enterprise operation. You know, you have your solo entrepreneur corporation. You have all different levels. And within those levels, most small businesses truly understand that they have to operate. And in order for them to continue to grow, be productive, and to really have their faith in their client and not always behind things, they don't understand that risk of operations. So, you mentioned, like, you know, customer service, marketing, a lot of internal employees, all that, labor costs. What would you say to someone that's in that space right now to have some of these internal issues, but you know, they're in a mindset, oh, you know, I want to hire five or six different people, but I need help. What advice would you have for them?
Your question is about enterprise operation. What advice would I have from that aspect? Is that what you're asking me?
Yes.
Okay. That's probably one of the hardest ones you have to deal with. Normally, and I didn't talk about this that much, you have to look at your business architecture, how your business is structured. Is it a labor-intensive type of business? Can you outsource certain labor requirements? Like if you have an artist, you need to have an artist on staff. Can you outsource that? And that is critical because, remember, enterprise operations also has to deal with cash flow, how much money you're bringing in versus how much money is going out of the business. So you want to try to have some type of strict control of your cost, management control of your cost. Like, does it make sense for us to hire four people when the job can be done by two people? So sometimes you may not find this out when you're starting a business. You may have to learn this over time, and that's what I deal with a lot of my clients. You know, you got to keep those labor costs in check. And most of the time I see a trend going on with people starting businesses. They're hiring subcontractors. Why people hiring subcontractors is because they don't want to pay insurance, because employees are a cost to a business. So rather than have an employee, they may want to hire them as a subcontractor, put all of those taxes and all of those different type of things, the health care insurance, onto the person that's a subcontractor. You're responsible for all that. I'm not going to pay you any of that. And that way I pay you a good salary, so you take care of all of your health care costs or whatever, your insurance or those type of things, and I can pay you a flat rate in terms of labor costs. So enterprise operations is really important. All five of them are important. I can't really rank them. I look at the five risks as a portfolio that you need to be equally aware of and how to manage that portfolio. But enterprise operations is definitely a critical one.
Okay. How can you have entrepreneurs minimize or prevent business risks that can lead to failure?
How can I help businesses minimize their failure rates? Is that what you're asking?
Yes.
You minimize failure. The first step is to look at the five risk factors, and I would say you need to rate yourself, and normally that's what I do with my clients. And I say, okay, let's give you a great example. Let's say the business environment risk. Okay, you want to start a business, right? I live in Texas. I'm in San Antonio. San Antonio doesn't have hurricanes. San Antonio doesn't have tornadoes. San Antonio doesn't have extreme weather. We don't have snow here. So San Antonio may be a great environment to start a business as opposed to, say Houston. I'm probably being hypothetical here. Houston is by the Gulf Coast, the Gulf of Mexico. They're known to have hurricanes. They're known to have extreme weather. When it's hurricane season or those type of things, people get worried. And because they're on the coastline, they have a business environment risk that a business located in San Antonio would not have. So if a client came to me and asked me, okay, start a business, and I said, okay, let me go through my portfolio. Well, I want to start a business in Houston. He tells me this, and Houston is, you know, it's a great business market. I said, okay, as you consider the business environment, Houston has those extreme weather conditions. You're dealing with water, you're dealing with floods, you're dealing with extreme weather. So based on the business environment portfolio, I say that's a higher risk, and I would try to help my client minimize his exposure to failure based on that one risk factor. That's what I would try to do. And I would do that all down the lines of the rest of the risk factors. How do you minimize that, and how do you put the client in an optimal position to make money and be profitable? So you have to look at different things. And that's what I would try to tell a client, to minimize failure. Well, I'm not going to say just because you're in a hurricane-prone area that it's going to minimize or maximize your failure. But I tell you, it's a risk that you may want to consider, because that's an environment risk that you don't play with or you try to overlook. That's what I would tell my clients or tell anybody in general.
Okay. That's where I'm located, in Houston. So.
Oh, goodness. Well, what a treat. Am I saying anything wrong?
No. I mean, we do have some weather, but it's nearly as bad sometimes as it looks on the weather, because it's so scattered. And we may have one here close underwater, and I'm sitting over here in the sun outside, no big deal.
Right.
But it just kind of depends on the area and all of that. So, but, yeah. So with your book, why would an entrepreneur say, okay, with all these other business books that's out there, and yes, it's talking about risk, what would make your book necessary for an entrepreneur to purchase?
The reason that people want to purchase my book would be next to a Rich Dad, Poor Dad, or say a book like, what's the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, and those type of books. Well, my book I would kind of say is a wake-up call. And you don't never forget this mantra. All businesses are guilty until proven innocent. My book is the wake-up call. My book is the real ugly side of entrepreneurship. What can happen if you get into a bad business or a business that it has any of these risk components to it. My book is the wake-up call. Also, my book is backed up by research. Most people that write those business books, their books are not backed up by research. My book is backed up by empirical research based on my doctoral work. And, you know, when I'm in an academic environment, my consultants, they call me Dr. Miles because of based on my prior research and my presentations at conferences. I've been researching entrepreneurial risk probably about 10 years now. So I back all of that up, and my book will save you a lot of heartache, save you a lot of money. And also, my book would also, if you take a look at it this way, my book would try to be an inspiration to you to know what not to do. So that's what I say about my book, as opposed to other books on the shelf.
Okay. What are some of the common questions you get from some of your clients or our workshop that you've attended?
Some of the common things that I see with clients that want to start a business, is that what you're asking?
Right.
My clients, I switch my client base from mid-market people to high-end market people, and I'll tell you the difference between the two. Most of the people that I counseled or people that I did some consulting work with that wanted to start a business wanted to do startups in highly competitive markets, in highly saturated markets. Case in point, I live in San Antonio. I had clients that want to start a restaurant, particularly a Mexican restaurant. Well, in San Antonio, that is so common here. You know, you could throw a rock and hit about three or four Mexican restaurants where you are. So I'm trying to talk this guy to doing this. He's not trying to hear me. I said, okay, you're going to open up a Mexican restaurant. What's your value proposition? In marketing, they say, what's the value proposition? What are you offering a customer as opposed to your competitors? And a guy he normally can't answer a question like that. Well, I just want to start a restaurant. So as I got more acute in my consulting skills, I'm finding out that people want to start businesses based on what they want to do or what they can do, not based on the market. And that's a big mistake. You can't start a business just because you want to start it. It's like, okay, think of it like this. I want to go commit a crime just to be committing a crime. But I'm not going to be a smart criminal. I'm going to be a dumb criminal. I'm going to just go up and start robbing people. Most people don't carry cash, right? They have debit cards. So my endeavor to try to go rob people is severely diminished because most people don't carry cash on them over $20. Most people have their money in a banking or bank system or some type of banking system. That's what I was finding out when I was dealing with clients. I want to start a business based on what I want to do, not necessarily based on a gap in a marketplace or a perceived need in the marketplace, and that's the wrong way to start a business. A business should be based on you seeing a gap in the marketplace.
And you're right. It's pretty much figuring out a way to solve a problem. And you
absolutely.
Have too many, like you say, for instance, a Mexican restaurant. If you have too many that's next door across the street and around the corner that's already solving that problem, what benefit can you bring to this area by doing the same thing of opening a mess restaurant? What's going to make you stand out from everybody else that's here? You know, so. Right. So it's something like you said, that you're starting as, you know, they say, it's something I want to do, or I'm just passionate about it. And I use example quite a bit of, I'm passionate about shoes. I love me shoes, but I don't want no shoes. Just let me go by and have and enjoy them, and I'm good. You know, so it's being a gift. So even with the people that you're talking to that, you know, have this passion and I want to do it and I just love doing this, how often do you run into those that just was dead set on doing something and you already see this is not going to work out? Do you continue to work with them, try to change their mind, or give them different solutions or something different that they can add to their business to make them stand out? How do you handle somebody like that to just, you know, I'm going to do it, I don't care what you say, I got all the money in the world, I just need you to help me fix this stuff? How do you work with a client like that, or do you just say it's not for me?
It's really difficult because every situation is different. You got stupidity with people that don't have money. You have stupidity with people that have money. Case in point, I also work with lottery winners, and they're usually worse, and they're worse from this aspect. You get someone who never had money before, right? They think the world is grand. And then if you read history about lottery winners, they're broke within a year, maybe 1 to 5 years, depending on what amount of money that they. You meet a guy, you try to I'm a business advisor. That's my capacity dealing with a client. I'm the guy between the lawyer and the CPA. I'm the money guy. I'm the guy that's going to show you how to make money, not just like a CPA tell you how much you spent. And I usually tell a guy, I say, listen, I've been in the game a little bit, and I would not advise you to do this venture. Now, let me tell you the kind of stuff that I have to deal with. I have to deal with family, girlfriends, guys having mistresses. A lot of guys end up getting divorced when they win a lottery from their spouses. It's actually equal with both male and female. Mm-hmm. Let's have a strong marriage. They end up getting divorced because it's like money changes people. And money tends to make people believe they're better than what they really are. If you're an idiot
right.
fun you want before you won the lottery, you're going to be an idiot with $1 million. But you don't bring any knowledge to you having that type of money to handle that type of money. So you're going to do the same thing you did without the money, which is get in trouble, partying every day. You start getting a new crop of friends. And the biggest issue that I have to deal with is family and people that who they trust who thought they were their friends who end up exploiting them.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of times they don't want to listen to me, and I plead with my clients. I usually give a client 3 strikes. I'll tell you once, I'll tell you twice, then the last time that I'm done. Then obviously I'm going to get my retainer, you know what I'm saying? But anyway, but the thing about it is I'm like, Melissa, I'm the wake-up call, okay? And sometimes you've heard this mantra, you can lead people to the water, but you can't make them drink it. Usually I've been getting clients after they've screwed up all their money, they're down to their last million. Oh, now life is becoming more clear to them. Well, maybe I need to invest my money wisely. So I try to be a preventive measure to a client, but really it's really difficult. The most difficulty that I have is dealing with the family. I'll give you a great story. This client that I had a guy that was a cousin or something, wanted him to invest in some type of clubs. I'll be blunt, it was a strip club, a gentleman's membership-based strip club. And I said to him, I says, why on earth would you want to do that? Well, you know, you can make a lot of money, this and that. I says, well, yeah, you can make a lot of money, but the problem with this is you need to have a good attorney on retainer. Because a lot of those people that in that type of industry, drugs and those type of illegal activities outside of stripping or those type of things come with that type of business. And I said, also, you got to be aware of the cops and law enforcement. They're going to make problems for your business because they usually either don't want the business in their neighborhood or the business has a reputation for the people that they hire. And most of those women who do that type of job are drug users or do prostitution on the side. So you got the police officers and law enforcement after you, so that's another risk. And then the dirty side of the business is you got to pay them off. And they're not going to go away. You're going to have to make them part of your payroll usually. you know, dirty cops, crooked cops, because they want money. You know, if you want to operate this business without any interference from them, well, you got to pay them. You know, it's kind of like extortion. But it's, I pleaded with my client not to do this. He wouldn't listen. Then you also have the other part of it. Well, you got to get a liquor license, right? And normally when you go get a liquor license, there's a lot of constraints with that. And he will not listen to me, and I actually literally walked away from this client. And he ended up getting in trouble. One of his establishments they did a sting on him and found drugs, and they blamed him. And now he has to pay attorneys. He's got to keep his name clean and whatever. And it's like I tried to prevent him from doing all of that. But sometimes the experience is the best experience. The bad experience is the best experience. I could tell you story after story. Clubs are not a good business to get into. It's just not. The life cycle is very short. People get tired of going to clubs. Unless you have a really high-end kind of place where it's membership-driven, where you know people, you're the type of clientele you want to have. Clubs are a really bad business, a bad industry to get into. You have a lot of licensing involved. You gotta have an attorney on retainer, and I'm not telling you something you don't know, but yeah, it's great to walk in. You the man, you're on the club, but you know that's a lot of stuff that you got to deal with. So I try to keep my clients away from those type of businesses.
You mentioned something that, and it's not only club owners, that a lot of businesses fail to. I won't say that they fail to realize it. They put blinders on. That the risk in, regardless of what business you go in, the risk varies. Some risk is a lot higher than others, but you always have some type of risk in any business that you start. And for the business owners that have the blinders on it, oh, it's not going to happen to me, I don't worry about it because I won't do XYZ. Or I'm not in this area, or I don't socialize with some people. I mean, you know, full of reasons, but when those people have blinders on, they're already in business, they're established, but they bring you in for, you know, hey, I just need you to help me out a little bit. For those that have blinders on, how do you help them take those blinders off and start slowly, you know, peeking up in that blind or just ripping off pages like a bag? How often do you have those?
Sometimes misguided optimism can be a good thing and also can be a bad thing. And a lot of the blinders come from people see something in a film or they see something that their friends are doing and think they can do it. And, you know, just because something works for somebody else doesn't necessarily mean it works for you. Just because, and I believe Michael Gerber talks about this in a book called E-Myth, which I referenced in my book. Just because you're a good painter doesn't mean you'll be a good guy running a painting company. So I may get a guy who thinks he's been painting 30 years and he wants to open his own paint store, and he may not be a good paint manager. He has blinders on. Because all the two different specific skills that are different. It's kind of like I liken it to this. Just because you're a good player doesn't mean you'll be a good coach, right? Kind of like the Peter Principle. Everybody rises to their level and competence. Well, people with blinders tend to do that. Then you, like, just because you're a good coach doesn't mean you'll be a good general manager. Or a good general manager doesn't mean you'll be a good president of a company. It can go on and on and on. So what I try to do is assess my client's skill set and assess what they have as opposed to what they want to do, and I try to advise them accordingly. And entrepreneurship is a great thing. Entrepreneurship is a hard thing as well. Remember what I said earlier, all businesses are guilty until proven innocent? You can have a business and not make money until 5 years from now and then change it on you, so you end up going in the toilet. And also, you have to remember this. Customers don't date products, they marry them. Just because your business is going great right now doesn't mean you're going to be that way 5 years from now, because the terrain of the business environment has changed. So you also got to keep your business competitive. And a person with these blinders have no idea what they're getting into. In business, you have to, yes, you have to have optimism, but you have to balance the optimism with realism. you know, just because we made great sales last month, this month may be a different story. So, you know, I'm usually the wake-up call. I try to present my clients with the truth, and I say, now you know the truth, you can make decisions about what you need to do. But I don't try to kill their optimism. I try to balance it. I think that's a better word. I balance the optimism against what's the reality of what's going on.
Right. Right. Yeah, that makes, you know, a lot of sense. But it's just getting them there. I'm not trying to keep a dream, but I need you to really look at what you're getting ready to do.
Absolutely.
And,
absolutely.
It may hurt. It may make you hurt a little bit, but, you know, as I would say, do you prefer to hurt a little bit now or you want to hurt a lot later? So.
Yes,
you know,
absolutely. Some people don't want to know the truth, to be honest with you. Some people want you to lie to them. You know, I'm not that kind of guy. I like to be up front, you know.
You're absolutely right, and you should be, especially within your business, because you're doing yourself a disservice. You know, that's where you're turning to one of those business owners. I'm just here for them and not really to help people, not really to do much for business, or you just at a, you know, collect a check, forget about what's going to happen with this, I'm taking my money, and, you know, the rest is on you. You know, that.
I can tell you a great story about a guy with blinders, if you want to hear it. You've heard of multi-level marketing, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know what that is, right? It's recruitment-driven business,
mm-hmm.
right?
Had
a guy. He's one of my clients. His brother-in-law was trying to get him to do this business, and this business is great. And what he doesn't know is outside of my business, I'm a legal expert witness, and I've been asked to appear in court as an expert witness for companies that do multi-level marketing. And I get a lot of people that still fall for that it's a very flawed business model. It's a business that has historically, unless you're creating the business historically, you don't make money doing a business like that. And multi-level marketing, and I'm probably doing a great service to your listeners, multi-level marketing is a business that you want to stay away from, because 60% of the people, they get into it out of it the first year, and the 40% that are still in it out after 2 years. It's a very flawed business. You got to recruit people, and it's a flawed business model. When my client comes to me, you know, I know the whole song and dance. Yeah, you can make all of this money. You can do all of this. And first thing I ask him is, I said, okay, he makes all this money. Ask to see his tax returns. That tells you the truth right there, right? And most guys who do that business won't show you their tax returns because they're not making the money that they're claiming they can make. And I was just interviewed in Forbes magazine about, I'm not going to mention the name of the company, it's a real popular company, and they interviewed me as a marketing expert, and I told them my opinion about that company, and what I pretty much said was accurate. Yeah, the people that start the company make the money, but the people that come in after the people that start the company, they never make money. A multi-level marketing, I talk about it in my book as well a little bit. That's a very risky business. Why would you want to get into a business that you're going to be out of within a year and you spend all of this money? Does that make any sense? No. So you want to stay away from risky business ventures, and that's a risky one.
But that's where the blinders come out of, you know, they just hear and they see the paper. And they hear you, but they're not really listening to everything
mm-hmm.
that's going on. They just, oh, I'm going to make some money. I'm broke. I could really use this. Oh, I made this money now in 2 years. You know, I've done for triplets. That's what one of the blind situations.
Oh, yeah.
They just see what's in front of them. Even if you did say, hey, you must have made a nice piece of, you know, change with it. What are you going to do with it? Are you going to be smart and invest it into something else, or are you going to leave it all in that one pot?
Most people don't even get that far, Miss Melissa.
No, you're
the money that
you're
they made.
Right. Absolutely.
I can tell you story after story after story about people who I've run into. They got into that type of business. And let me give you some other facts about it. I'll tell you what I was on a TV show in Dallas last week, and I'll tell you what I told them. Most of the people that get into that business, the SBA will not lend them money to start that business or to get into that business. And small business development centers, you know, the universities help small businesses. They call them the SBDCs. They refuse to counsel anyone that is involved with multi-level marketing. So what does that tell you?
That's my point. You have blinders on and you just see what's in front of you.
They really don't want to see the truth of something. I want to emphasize this. Optimism is great, but optimism has to be balanced with facts and realism. And if you know that you're not going to make money at a business, you know this. Maybe you need to put your effort and energy into another, go in another direction. And some people, you have two types of people. Some people have to stick their head in the oven to see if the oven is hot. Some people, you tell them it's hot, they're good. Okay, so that's what I got to deal with sometimes.
I understand, and I can only imagine, you know, some of the things that you have to do, or, you know, convince people, or the ones that just simply don't get it, you know. So I'm with you. So we're kind of close to the end of the show, but I don't want to get off without you letting people know where they can purchase your book, how they can get in contact with you, if they
want
to connect, your social media,
so
lay all that out for us.
Sure. You can get my book on Amazon.com. You can also get my book from BarnesandNobles.com. If you want to contact me or send me an email or whatever, you can go to my website. It's www.mdicorpventures.com. I'm CEO of Miles Development Industries. That's my consulting practice and venture capital business. And shoot me an email or whatever, and I will be glad to. I'm always looking to pick up new clients. And like I said, I believe in helping people. I don't like to see people fail, and I believe that because I'm passionate about helping people, I believe that I'm making a difference. Not only am I making money for myself and my business, but I provide a valuable service. And I like to see people be successful. I don't like to see people being taken advantage of. That really bothers me.
Right. That it just doesn't. It doesn't make sense, but unfortunately we do have those people here in this world. And those that don't know the right questions to ask or don't know when they are being taken advantage of, they're sincerely trying to learn, grow a business, start a business, but because they don't know, they end up with, you know, some of those people, unfortunately. So hopefully, you know, Liz that's listening to this call, one, they'll purchase your book, and if they found some valuable information off of the things that you've shared with us today, so they can miss that one little piece of being taken advantage of and know some of the questions to ask and not just, you know, because you gave me this big kumbai and gave me this wonderful picture that, you know, I just have to fall in. So what is your social media?
I'm all over social media. I don't do Facebook. I use LinkedIn. If you want to connect with me on LinkedIn, I'll give them my personal email address. It's drderekx@yahoo.com. I believe LinkedIn changed it to where you can't just send somebody an invite. You got to put in their email. And, you know, I'm all over social media. I have an Amazon page which displays both of my books and my background. And I'm on Twitter. And that's about it. I'm on the major, you know, the major social media sites. I'm on Twitter, LinkedIn, and I have one more on my ResearchGate. And I actually have a workshop that I did with the SBA on multi-level marketing. If you go up there and download it, I'll save you a lot of heartache.
There you go. You got a free gift. So, you know, download this seminar and listen understand, take the blinds off, open your ears, and get what's being offered, what's being said, and take it in. Even though it may be hard to hear, I need you to take it in so you can be successful. We want you to be successful. We want you to be able to grow, be productive, and just be efficient with your day-to-day operations. So thank you again, Ms. Miles, for joining us, talking with us today, and just sharing everything that you shared, and especially those top five factors. That was very good.
Thank you so much for having me. I enjoyed it. If you need to bring me back, I have a new book coming out soon. I'll get in contact with you, get you up to speed on that. But thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Thank you. I love the book. Yeah. Connect back with us, and so we can bring you back on and talk about the book and get more information out there.
Absolutely. And I have your copy in the mail.
Thank you so much.
I apologize.
No problem. No problem. Have a wonderful day.
All righty. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Bye-bye.